Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, so very welcome along to the GAR Football Show brought to you by AIB. It's finally here, lads. All-Ireland final day. Yep. All the talk and all the messing's over. It's Mayo versus Dublin. It's the big one. There's a bit of a rivalry developing. It's, to be honest, like, it's 2-1 and a draw. Is that fair enough to say since 2011? Mayo won 2011.
Yeah, 2012.
I see. That's 2006, maybe?
Gerard Brady liked to throw that in, but like that, they're different teams. That's old school. With these two, the chunk of these two teams, it's 2-1 and a draw, which there's nothing really between the two teams, which makes it bizarre that Mayo are 3-1 outsiders. First of all, I want to talk about the Mayo-Dublin rivalry. There is a rivalry developing, and maybe if we go back as far as 2006, Barry, you were playing that whole warm-up at the Hill. I know they're different teams, but that kind of set the tone. I think neither team like each other. But just bring you back briefly, because we talked about it so much in Castlebar, is this them warming up in front of the Hill.
Yeah.
The message came in, Mayo are warming up down the Hill. What goes through the dressing room at that stage?
It actually didn't bother me at all. I'd always be quite calm anyway in the dressing room before I went out, but some lads were getting giddy about it and some lads were actually, you know, starting to foam at the mouth as well and just wanted the dressing room door to be open, you know. And I think when we run out onto the pitch, I think a few of the guys just wanted to head straight for the Hill, didn't even want to get the photo done or anything like that. But yeah, it was a bizarre situation. I mean, we found out whatever probably 30 seconds before we went out onto the pitch where it came through to our dressing room. We were always in the warm up in a huddle, just Pillar would say his last few words before he went out onto the pitch. So, but yeah, very surreal situation heading down to the Hill when there's already probably 35 people there trying to get a warm up done. And looking back on it now, like the warm up was just a waste of time, you know.
There was no warm up,
you couldn't do anything, you know. You were looking around, you were probably dodging balls that were coming your direction. I think was it the Mayo physio got hit in the head, was knocked out cold by a ball, and it was just 70 players running around. Probably close enough to, you know, a row developing at a couple of different stages, just because of the situation that everyone found themselves, and people were so pumped up. The Hill was going absolutely mental at that stage as well. And you know, when you bring it forward to the start of the game, Mayo went into a 5-1 lead, so you could probably argue that, you know,
it worked
and maybe we should have just went up to the canal end, got a proper warm up done, had a cool head, and then once the ball was thrown in, actually got going. Then
you were full back that day.
Yeah,
like it's just
loved it.
Isn't it incredible? It's incredible how many lines in the field you had. Mortimer gave you a hard time, right? What did he get?
No, Mortimer, I think Paul Griffin was on Mortimer. I was on Kieran McDonald's. He was 14, yeah.
All right.
He had a good game that day. I think he kicked the sideline midway through the first half. You know, it was just outrageous. And obviously trying to nullify him on the day was difficult. But strangely enough, I started playing under Tommy Lyons cornerback. I was more of a halfback.
Yeah.
There was an opportunity there to play cornerback when Tommy put me in. But certainly I would have felt the halfback line was my most natural area to pitch to play. And then fast forward a few years, Pat decided to go with a defensive game plan, so myself and Brian Cullen, who were predominantly half forwards, went in, or half backs were then defensive half forwards. So but pretty much played between 2 and 12 at various stages.
We talk about Lee Keegan and his versatility going into the full back line. Like, I mean, you played a lot of football for Dublin at midfield, and I'm not sure you played championship football there. Full back line, half back line, midfield and half forward line. I don't think there's too many players. I can't think of one that has played championship football at the highest level in as many lines.
Yeah, that's possibly true. I think the first four or five Leinster medals I won were, you know, five completely different positions. You know? I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but looking back, I probably would have preferred just to be number seven for like 11 years.
That's the thing. I always say versatility is a brilliant thing and it's a horrible thing. It's all rolled into one. As in, if a place comes up, he can do a job there, but then you're never specialising in one.
Yeah.
You're lucky enough that you got an All-Star, but it would have hampered your ability to get an All-Star by playing, you know, not being nailed down, as in he's a specialist wing back, for example.
Yeah, I mean, there is big variations between the different positions. Like, obviously, going out into Croke Park and playing a championship match there, you are going to be pulled into different areas of the pitch on any given day, and that's fine. You're not boxed into one position for the full 75 minutes. But, yeah, to go from corner back to half forward, or even, you know, in 2011, the All-Ireland final, myself and Alan Brogan were basically playing as a two-man centre forward, and he was the offensive centre forward and I was the defensive centre forward. So yeah, it was, I suppose the game was just changing at the time, so you got to roll with it.
Yeah, roll with it.
Can
now,
I just,
no,
sorry,
just before you talk here, Conan, because now that we're talking about, I would say Barry would have been an underrated player for Dublin because he was moved around so much. I think it's only when you retire you realise, Jesus Christ, he's played championship football, you know, in four lines of the field. I want to draw attention to a piece you wrote on sportsshow.ie yesterday.
This is my favourite part of the show.
This is a piece on Lee Keegan. Now, Conan has to be pulled up on this. Here's the headline of this. The most undervalued man in Ireland, but the most important man in Mayo. Basically, the piece is about Lee Keegan being an underrated player
this season.
Now, I've met a lot of people. I've never met one that underrates Lee Keegan.
Well, I'm glad you pulled me up on that, Colin Parkinson, because did you read the piece? Like, you actually quoted him.
I read it.
I'll read out a line from you on this podcast. The form of Lee Keegan is a bit worrying. He's not playing at the level he's been playing at for the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And that's, but like, that like, I'm not saying
comment?
Lee
when
Keegan,
was that comment though? Pre
before Tyrone.
Tyrone.
Before
okay.
Tyrone, yeah. After four games in the championship.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm not saying that Lee Keegan, nobody knows about Lee Keegan, but it says in the piece that this season Lee Keegan is being underrated because he's not doing what he usually does. He's doing a job for the team, wherein actually then when you look at it, he's probably been the most important player because he's doing that job for the team. He's marking Quinlivan, he's marking Sean Kavanagh, but he's still managing to sort of do what
glad,
he can
I'm
do.
Glad, I'm glad you mentioned Quinlivan and Kavanagh now, because I thought you would come back with me on this one. So against London he marked Mark Gotcha, hardly a stalwart, so, you know. Then against Galway, he marked Shane Walsh, fair enough. Against Fermanagh, he marked Ryan Jones when he could have been marking their two under full forward line, who are outstanding. And against Kildare, he marked Fergal Conway, not their most dangerous player at all. Against Westmeath, he marked Paul Sharry. So, like, the idea, because he marked Cavan and Quinlivan, I think this has just developed into him doing this. And because Kavanagh and Quinlivan spend a lot of time out the field. The fact of the matter is, Keegan wasn't playing at the level that he was, you know, earlier on in the season. He's been given this new job now, and I think this has just developed. I don't think this was necessarily a job earlier in the year. He wasn't playing brilliantly. Now he is playing brilliantly. He's not undervalued. I don't know anyone
he was.
Barry, cast the vote here. I've been under instructions to pull you up on this, by the way.
But I'm happy for you pulling me up. Like, I'm not saying that Lee Keegan's playing badly. I'm saying he's playing really well.
You're saying he's underrated.
This season.
Who underrates him?
You, for one.
I don't underrate
him. After the Tipperary game, we actually talked about Mayo again and their form, and Lee Keegan's name comes into it all the time because he's one of their big hitters. So we start mentioning these players like who aren't playing that well for Mayo, and I think he's definitely one who, he might not be having the exact same season that he's been having the last 5 years. Like you mentioned, I know it was before Tyrone, but he's doing a completely different job.
Yeah, and since Tyrone he's doing a completely different job.
Yeah, I think nearly his summer is broken into two halves, really. Yeah. You know, you have the pre-Tyrone game and then Tyrone game onwards. But obviously, you know, when you get to the All-Ireland quarter-final playing like against Tyrone and in the semi-final, there's so much more interest in the games, so much more analysis that maybe some of the previous games were just a bit under the radar. But, you know, I don't think he was operating at his best at all in sort of May, June, July time. And, you know, if you look at the scoring stats and stuff, he wasn't as heavily involved either with assists or scores, but I don't think he's undervalued at all either. I'll have to agree with that one.
You know, but you're funny, you're throwing the people he's marking there. Like, I don't know who he could mark against London to make it sound
well,
like
no,
it's
not
a, it's
London
a big job.
But against Kildare he could mark Kelly, for example, who's their most dangerous forward.
Just sort of cast aside the Galway one, I mean, mark Shane Walsh, fair enough.
Against
but
Fermanagh he could have marked
Quigley or Corrigan.
The Fermanagh game was a disaster from all of them. Like,
no, but that's neither here nor there. I'm just saying that role, if he's this, I don't think he was given this man-marking role. I think this developed, this was given with Sean Kavanagh specifically because Sean Kavanagh doesn't just play inside, he comes out, and Keegan's perfect for him. Quinlivan, almost identical, plays inside, comes out. I think I think this role has developed rather than this was his role all year.
But I think it's sort of, it reflects how Rochford's setting his teams up as well, because he will be marking Connolly this time. They're not going to try and find that exact same player who's going to go inside and come out like McMenamin. Well, actually,
Yeah.
I think that role came about by accident, rather than design. And just the fact that it was Sean Kavanagh, the personnel and the opposition that they were playing. And even if they were playing Tipperary in the quarterfinal, I don't think maybe he might have been designated to go on Quinlevin. I think it was just Sean Kavanagh was such a big name.
And it was such a success.
Such a success that, you know, decided to continue with it.
Yeah. On another point, we'll leave this now. I was reading a piece by Pádraig Joyce during the week and I was surprised by it a little bit. He was saying that for All-Ireland finals, you have to bring something new to your game, right? And I just in my head, kind of, you know, playing in finals, never in All-Ireland finals, so this was a surprise to me. Like, my understanding was you kind of do the simple things right, you know what I mean? You play yourself into the game, you don't go crazy. I didn't think All-Ireland final day was somewhere to bring something new into your game. He said he practiced his right foot before the Mead All-Ireland final 2001, and ended up scoring 2 points in the final off it. Now, you're not going to develop your bad foot in 3 weeks to a level where it's going to be, you know, outstanding. So I reckon he had a right foot, but I understand
you fine tune things. Yeah,
you fine tune things. I understand what he means, but I wouldn't think players need to dramatically alter their game.
I don't think so, and I think that's a big big mistake that players and teams make, that when they win a semi-final, all of a sudden you're into a final now and you feel like you have to give a 10 out of 10 performance in the final to win. You actually don't, you know. I think if you do stick to your core aspects and what works well for you and try and maximise them, you know, you give yourself as better chance as possible. And if you look at the Mayo teams over the last number of years, they've beaten a lot of brilliant teams at All-Ireland quarterfinal and semi-final stage, maybe given like a 9 out of 10 performance. Then they get to an All-Ireland final and they give a 5 out of 10, and actually a 7 out of 10 might have won the final for them. So, you know, they think all of a sudden we get to a final, you know, there's a phrase there, you got to rise to the occasion. Well, I don't think you can rise to the occasion. You just got to fall back on what you're good at and make sure that you do all the basics extremely well, cut out the errors and sort of fine tune certain aspects of your game.
Because that's another thing, if you are trying to bring something new to your game, imagine like the pressure you're putting on yourself, like
self-imposed
pressure. Have I got this right, you know? Am I in 3 weeks, I imagine that's the last thing. I imagine the nerves in All-Ireland final day must be just off the charts.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it was just a relief for us.
You bothered about it.
Well, we were just relieved to beat Donegal in the semi-final because we've been so close for so many years. Like, Dublin hadn't got to a final in 16 years. So that was our focus, really, for the first week or 10 days. Then, obviously, you get into the nitty-gritty of
the analysis.
What
about meeting the president? Like, is that not nerve-wracking? Like, as in, because you've watched this on TV all your life.
We practiced that the week before.
Did you?
Yeah.
With the president?
We gave Michael Dee a ring, actually, before he came into term. But Pat Gilroy actually acted as the president out in DCU on the Sunday afternoon before the 7 days before the game, and we went through the whole process because we had our last A versus B game. Went into the dressing rooms. You had one team and a team sheet on one dressing room, a team sheet on the other. Tried to keep it as sort of hectic and intense as possible. And then we lined up everyone out on the pitch and went through it one by one. Pat shook everyone's hand. Everyone was trying their best not to laugh, take it as serious as possible. And then we had a full out 70-minute match. But
so you ran out of the dressing room. You did your normal warm up that you do. You just ran through the whole thing. You didn't play the national anthem or anything.
No, nothing like that. But we went back then to the sideline. In front of the dressing rooms, and we lined up one by one, shook hands, and then we went back into our huddle and
very good
for the match. Yeah.
Could you maybe really understand Joyce's argument? Like, when you get to a big stage, like when Galway are in an All-Ireland final, for example, people are going to say, right, Pádraig Joyce, left foot, let's keep an eye out for him. When you're in a Leinster final, people would have said, right, Colin Parkinson, let's keep an eye on him. Could you maybe understand that, where they're trying to like change up a bit?
Yeah, no, I can. But like, it just went against, I never really heard a player saying that before. I think maybe for someone on the full forward line like him, or maybe you could say, I'll use a dummy solo because he dives on my foot. You know what I mean? Maybe for, it depends on who you're marking. You know, if it's somebody, like, maybe you can overthink this kind of thing. But definitely if Pádraig Joyce is overly left, maybe he's going to say, I don't know, throw in a dummy solo. But you imagine he should have a dummy solo in his locker.
During his 15-20 years previously.
What new should you be bringing in that in 3 weeks? It's a very short period of time to bring something new to your game.
I think you focus on some areas more than others. You know, it'd be similar if you're, you know, playing in the full back line, if you're marking guys who are 5'10" all summer, and then all of a sudden you're marking Donaghy or someone like that. Like, you're just going to practice breaking the ball and get lads to hit 50-yard, 60-yard balls into you, and you'll practice it every single training session in the league up to the final. Yeah. Then, so
part of your skill set, though, is 3 weeks is not enough, really, to you know, to start. Yeah. If Joyce was like, I've no right foot, I'm practicing for 3 weeks, I will have a right foot in 3 weeks. You probably won't.
No, you know? Won't. No
but
chance.
Joyce was always decent off his right. Like, not brilliant, but he was. I think he's so bloody brilliant off his left. People kind of.
Yeah, he's so exceptional from the left hand side that they probably ignored the right hand one. Yeah,
maybe underrated a little bit. Another thing there, quickly before we move on, is Dara O'Shea, and you touched on it there, All Ireland final day. He didn't write this week, he wrote the week before, saying that he noticed that in every All-Ireland final he played with Kerry is somebody playing for the headlines. Yeah. You know, he says it always happens that some lad gets carried away with himself and he's out to play for himself rather than team. And he says he can spot them a mile away. Mm. I think this is bizarre as well. Like, I mean, like in a team situation when you're talking about Kerry, who are bloody, you know, playing them a lot, for somebody to go out and just go on a solo run like that, you know, I thought that was a strange one too.
Yeah, I do as well. I mean, do players focus on trying to get the man of the match award, you know, heading into an All-Ireland final? I don't think so. I think lads just focus on their own role, you know, buy into what the tactics are on the day, whatever the manager has to say to you, and, you know, basically you're going to do whatever it takes to win the match. And, you know, if that means you end up not getting a shot, or that means, you know, you have to go back and cover and put in 15 tackles, etc., you just got to do what you have to do. I never thought of something like that, or I never noticed it
and
with someone.
He said it's so common. Like, he said that this is not. If you're like that, you won't be on the team come All-Ireland final. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You would have been found out earlier.
You would have been found out years ago, even before you ever think of playing in an All-Ireland
final. Did he mention any names? Like,
no, obviously
come
not.
Come on, Donna. Yeah. Like, I can't. I'm trying to think through those Kerry teams of the last decade.
I can't
figure out who it would be.
But he said it was, the way he wrote it was, or, you know, the way it was written was that, you know, it was so common. And he saw it every, you know what I mean, in all.
It was very clear.
Very clear to him. He'd spot these kind of characters all over the place. But look, I think he's stretching it a little bit.
Just jealous someone's having a good game.
Maybe someone doesn't pass it to him.
Yeah. He's feeling hard done by.
Dara gets the hump. Yeah. I know what you're at. Anyways, listen, I was up at the Mayo press conference. It was last week now. And I caught up with Stephen Rutcher. I got maybe 12 and a half minutes with him. He was in good form. So have a listen to how it went. Stephen, how are you enjoying the build-up? Are you able to enjoy the build-up? Is there too much pressure?
I wouldn't say no. There certainly isn't the level of pressure that probably people may think. Maybe that's in relation to a lot of people probably have said that, you know, that we're going up maybe to make the numbers up. But no, it's I don't think it's necessarily at a stage of enjoyment either. It's certainly work, you know, that's the way it should be really too.
How have you taken to the intercounty game? Do you find it more difficult than you thought before you came in? You're coming from a high level of club background, but what's the step up like?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly we would have started back a lot later than a number of teams in back in late December, and the intensity from week to week and the quickness that the games come around in the league sort of does put you into a whirlwind. And certainly I know that became a little bit of a challenge for us, you know, because we had started back late. We picked up a couple of injuries, under-21s, all the things. So it's been really helter-skelter. And then invariably, I suppose, you know, the way that the championship played out hasn't had us an opportunity really to
draw breath,
that'd be more the point. But look, you know, at the same time, I've enjoyed a lot of it, and a certain amount of it has been challenging. But look, we're down to the last two, so you know, it's a case of getting on with it.
When you took over the job, what weaknesses did you think you needed to fix, you know, to make this Mayo team your own?
I wouldn't say that. I suppose invariably we were just looking at it to put our own stamp on the team. I think, you know, what we had looked at is that we probably couldn't continue to do what the team had maybe done in the past, and for whatever reasons they were, I think, you know, it's probably one of the areas that we looked at was defensively, you know, concessions of goals. That has been a big thing that we've been just very conscious of, and looking to set ourselves up around that. And I think by and large we've done that. We've made a mistake or two, and we've been punished for that, and rightly so. We're at a very, very high level, and invariably if we make those levels of mistakes in All-Ireland final, we'll be damn well punished for it. So that would have been one of the areas. We're looking to move the ball at pace, but again, I think in that we're still certainly a work in progress in relation to that. And you know, that we'll get that right in the next 3 weeks. I doubt it, but we'll continue to do that into next year also.
Yeah, you're kicking the ball a lot more, and that's a feature of your Cara Finn team, you know, and Tony's Cross McGlenn team, and that's the way you like to play football. And I just use an example recently, like when Liam Cairns took over Laois, he tried to change us to a kicking team when we were a running team under Mico. And it's easier said than done. It's easier, it sounds easy, but when lads' natural game is to run the ball and not look up straight away, it's not that easy to kind of get that, kind of instill that new style into players.
Yeah, you know, you're damn right. It is a bit of a challenge because, you know, certainly in pressure situations, you know, teams and players revert to type, and you know, it's not to necessarily, you know, look to brand yourself as a kicking team or a running team or that, because I mean, you know, you don't want to make yourself predictable either. All right, so I think what we were looking to really do was to put a brand of football that will move the ball quickly, and sometimes that'll be to run it, and sometimes that'll be to kick it. And I think, you know, when you're looking to kick the ball, I think people get this idea that it's all about 45, 50 meter kicks, and you know, I don't know if there's that many players, honestly, throughout the country that can do that consistently. And the way defensive systems are set up and that now, a lot of those 40, 50 metre passes are the ones they get at up by sweepers.
Yeah, that's the way. And, you know, your form after the Galway game, like, I mean, after the Galway game, because you're implementing a new sweeper, a bit more conservative, not trying to concede goals, trying to reduce the kick pass, and we attempted when you lost to Galway to go, oh, this isn't working, because I know what will work with these lads. You know, it took a bit of courage to stick with
it. Yeah, no, not at all. Because, you know, we got beaten by a score against Galway, and we played really disappointingly for what we knew was our level. We were rightly and properly ambushed by Galway, and they were, you know, they were deserving winners of that. And, you know, whether our eye was off the ball, whether we just didn't perform, whatever it is actually, it doesn't matter anymore. What does matter is that we went about driving on, taking each challenge as it came. We looked to embrace the qualifiers, knew there were going to be, it was going to be a new challenge to us. But at the same time, it did afford us games, gave, you know, as you said, you know, trying to implement, I wouldn't say, you know, big sweepers system or any different elements of it, but looking to improve on those little bits. And I suppose that's what we've really taken out of what the qualifiers have given us.
To be fair, you got a favourable enough draw in the qualifiers, like no huge stinger, especially after the confidence being knocked against Galway. You kind of got back into it with a home draw. Now, I'd say it was panic stations at half-time against Fermanagh, but...
Yeah, well, like, I mean, if people were to be really... you know, analyse that performance, there's a number of things to it. There was a really, really strong breeze in that game.
Yeah.
And at 30 minutes on the clock, the score is 1-6 to 1-4 in that game. And we give away a really disappointing goal that we were, you know, that we just, as a team and in roles and responsibilities, we'd be really, really disappointed with. But after, you know, we'd done a lot of good things against that breeze. A couple of individual errors had coughed up soft scores, and if people looked at that, I mean, Tomás Corrigan kicked a point from underneath the stand that I'd say if I asked the lads to spend the rest of the summer blowing Castlebar trying to do that, find it very, very difficult. Breen at wing back scored 3 points from out and around the 45. So in that 5-6 minute spell just before half time, Fermanagh really hit us, right? And you know, they were they went from being 2 points, all of a sudden they were 7 points up at half time. But throughout the second half, I felt we were in total control of the game. And look, we came across, we got across the line by whatever, you know, a couple of points in the end. But I thought for the vast majority of the game, certainly throughout the second half, we were in a lot of control.
Where do you see your Mayo's form? You know, I see it just being patchy. I see you playing unbelievable football at times, but then going out of games. And like, how do you get that right to extend those purple patches, you know, and try and narrow in, you know, losing concentration parts.
Yeah, and I think you've just hit the nail on the head. It's a loss of concentration, because when we dig deep down into the analysis, it's a silly hand pass. It's trying to kick the ball from the right side of the field to the left when it's not on. It's doing something that's outside of what we're planning to do. And, you know, is that because you've gone through that purple patch, as you said, and you've gone 4, 5, 6, 7 points off, and you're just getting to a level of confidence that's sort of outside of what needs to be. And I take back for, I think I heard Shane Horgan previously being asked, what's so good about Joe Smith and his job. And he says that no matter what the scoreline is, he demands that you stick to brilliant basics. And that's what we've been trying to really get with the team. And if we can get to that level the day of the All-Ireland final, I've no doubt that we'll hit some level of purple patch. But if we can get the level of consistency and a level of attention to the basics right, I think we'll be really competitive in along that 70-minute period.
Yeah, do you think you've improved as a manager over the course of the year?
I'd like to think so. I think, one thing I think you asked me about the difference from club to county, I think, there's certainly number of challenges along the way. There's obviously from media and a public viewing, it's a lot more under the microscope. A league game above in North Galway doesn't get the same attention as a drubbing below in Porcupine in January, or a defeat in Castlebar on a wet Saturday's evening in June. But there's been a lot of positive aspects within it. I think I've seen the group grow over the summer out of, what has been, a challenging summer in many ways, because, we didn't expect to lose against Galway. And I don't say that in a disrespectful or in a cocky or an arrogant way. We had prepared well, and we got caught. We had a bad day at the office.
In hindsight, it might work out well for you. You know, you're back where you wanted to be with a lot more games under your belt.
Maybe I'll talk to you the last week in September maybe about that, if that is the case. But what has shown is that the group don't lie down, once a challenge is thrown to them. They got up, and they've dealt with different challenges throughout every game. So as regards being a resilient group, a resilient management, and really looking to have a unified and aligned focus, I think we've shown that, and we're really, really looking forward to the final.
Well, just from watching the semi-final with Dublin and Kerry, did it make you more optimistic or did it make you more pessimistic of your chances? Because Dublin dominated a lot of the game, but Kerry showed ways that Dublin are human and you can get under their skin and you can get at them.
Yeah, a lot of people ask you before and after the game, what's your preference? I think, it's a crazy question because...
Leash is your preference.
both those teams are very, very... are high quality teams, a lot of good footballers. So, and I say this in a very respectful manner as well. Anything I saw in Dublin wasn't really new.
No, we know how they're going to play in general.
They've got they can attack from corner back. Yeah. They can defend from corner forward. They can put 14, 15 fellas in their own half if they want. They can go short on kickouts. They can go long on kickouts. So I don't think we saw anything different in that. They'll have a lot of structure in relation to their defence. So in that, they've also brought the very best out of a lot of these Mayo footballers over the last number of years. And invariably, they have been the right side of that result. But, someday... maybe this group will get the right side of them.
Get over the line. Just finally, is that something you've been working on with Mayo to make them less predictable? Because in my eyes, from trying to analyse Mayo, I'm less sure of how they're going to come at a game now.
I don't mind you've all day to analyse them.
I've nothing else to do but study. But it is something now going into the final. It's like, I'm not sure what Mayo might do. Whereas, before, I would have been pretty sure. A bit like Dublin, how they're going to set up. Whereas,
I don't intend to enlighten you anymore.
No, I'm not asking, but even just bringing that in, was that something you said you need to work on when you took over? Is a bit of unpredictability and maybe a bit of flexibility with the system?
I suppose in some ways we're looking to name and put a certain element of structure around that we can be comfortable with no matter who we're playing. But then I think, given respect to the opposition and the opportunity that they may present, I think sometimes you have to go, if you want to call horses for courses or cut your cloth to suit your measure. I think that's the part that's needed. The other teams are trying to identify weaknesses in you and they're trying to exploit that, and I think you owe that to your team that you go and do likewise.
Yeah.
If you see that there's an opportunity in a certain area of the field or play a certain way, why not give yourself that little bit of advantage?
That gives them confidence if you can identify things. They have faith in you. You have faith in them.
Yeah, exactly. It's you're looking to create any little bit of an advantage, any little bit of an edge, any little bit that will help give that bit of confidence to the group. And sometimes it plays off and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, Stephen Rochford there, lads. And I don't know, the thing that sticks out to me is this fella's a rookie manager. You know, he's only ever managed at club level. He's taken over a team that have been contenders for the 4 years previously, playing a certain way, playing 15 men, the full court press, all those things, running the ball from a brilliant attacking half back line. And he comes in and starts changing a little bit and loses Connacht for the first time in 5 years. Like, you know, it would be very easy for him to have said, okay, I got this wrong, I'm going to change back.
Absolutely, and full credit to him for sticking to his guns. But obviously, you know, the senior players in the squad would have had an important role to play in that as well, because he would have had to get them to buy into this new system or new strategy earlier in the year, and would have kept talking about it, working on it as the year went on, and felt that they would, you know, take a bit of ownership of it as well. So, you know, driving home that Sunday night after losing to Galway, I'm sure he was head scratching, and himself and Tony McEntee were probably on the phone that night and the next day wondering, you know, what the next plan should be. But, you know, I'm sure they had a team meeting on the Monday night or Tuesday and discussed it and said, look, you know, there's a bigger picture at play. We're in the All-Ireland series. Connacht has done another Connacht medal. Isn't that valuable to us this year? That's not what we're about. It's all about September. And in fairness to him, they've turned it around and got better.
Yeah, big time. And this is a team who have given the bullet to their managers the previous year. Imagine being Rochford after that. Like I said, like, am I under pressure here? Like, Stephen, we're just having a players' meeting. What?
We'll send you a text later on.
Get the P45. It must have been difficult, you know, because a group of players who are self-manage, you know what I mean, they've proven that by getting as far as they did the year before and almost beating Dublin with a management team they didn't believe in. So you're coming in, especially as the rookie manager, lads, like this really, you know, he'd never managed that level before, a horrible loss to a rival in Connacht, and stuck to his principles, so that should be commended.
Yeah, one of the things I liked most about Rochford, well, so far, I think it was January 31st they were playing Dublin up in Mayo, first game of the league, and they played this horrific sort of defensive style. Everyone's behind the ball.
Against Dublin, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an awful night up there.
They were also getting hammered by Cork the first day out in the league, yeah. So the second day, was it?
Oh, was it the second day? Yeah, there you go. And I just thought, they got Pete again that day as well, but I remember thinking, fair play to him. He's sort of trying a few different things here. You could see that maybe actually they're thinking towards September for once. We was like, Mayo used to come flying out of the blocks, hammering everybody in sight. And then come August, you could start to see that it was winding down a little bit. But I thought, like, you know, obviously they weren't going to keep playing that way, but it was good to see that they were trying something different. And then off the back of what happened last year with the two managers, maybe the players appreciate that he is looking at something else. Even when they're getting bit by Galway, it's like, well, hang on, there's a bigger plan here. We're not trying to win Connacht this year, we're trying to go on. I'm not saying they threw the Galway game, but they could see that they were playing a different way. That maybe it'll benefit them in a few months' time. Like, so maybe that tinkering. And
I do know that a lot of the Mayo players felt at the end of last year that the management team were poor at analysing opposition tactically. Mm. And so obviously that's an area that they've really focused in on this year, and obviously you can see it all through the summer because they've set up the teams and they've played personnel, different roles, different positions depending on who the opposition is. So that, you know, if the previous management team did neglect that area, a sudden focus on that and improvement on it really does increase your chances of success, you know.
And I think when the players finally, like, I'm obviously not inside the dressing room or the bubble, but like for me, for the Tyrone game, you know, like taking off Keane, your full back, and replacing him with Alan Dillon, playing Alan Dillon centre forward, knowing Justin McMahon's going to drop off. Like all these moves would go, I'd say the Mayo players went after that game. They won a tactical game, which Mayo are not known for winning. They went
against Mickey Hart.
Against the Tyrone team that they were underdogs for, and all the switches worked. And I'd say the players that day went, Rochford's onto something. These lads are onto something. We can believe in these lads now, that we can actually stop our little chats amongst ourselves about tactics, because players do talk tactics all the time and say, why isn't the manager thinking that? I can relax on that kind of shit now and worry about my game, and Rochford and McEntee will look after, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, that was a huge call. I mean, no one saw that coming, because, you know, Alan Dillon hadn't got much game time at all 2015 and this year as well. But to start him in All-Ireland quarterfinal, straight knock, and give him a half and say, Alan, look, there's not 50-60 minutes in you here, here's a half. Kept it under the radar, so the move actually never, I don't know when Alan found out that he was playing, but no one told anyone outside the camp, so that was a good sign of sort of confidentiality and trust amongst the group.
Yeah, true.
And it completely disrupted Tyrone's play, Justin McMahon having to come off, and then all of a sudden Alan Dillon was taken off. You know.
Now that we're mentioning this, we're going to get to the analysis in a minute. Alan Dillon for centre forward, anybody?
Possibly, yeah. Possibly. That was one of the things I was thinking about.
Yeah,
like, he will get minutes on Sunday. How long will he get? Like,
yeah. Okay. Well, listen. We'll talk about it in a minute. We'll be back with some analysis.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, backing club and county.
I was reading Jim McGuinness, lads, during the week, and he kind of went, Mayo have to change something, and then went, what do they have to change? And then couldn't think of anything really that they have to change. So just says they need to bring some anarchy to the game. You know, but like, maybe there isn't, like, you know, do they need to change something? We talked about this before Kerry played Dublin. Like, did they put Barry Moran in full forward? Mm. All these things, do they drastically change their game plan? They do need to bring their A game. There's no doubt about that. They need to get goals. They need to play Aidan O'Shea.
Clean sheet.
Mm. They need to play Aidan O'Shea in a position where they can get the best out of him.
Yeah.
Do you play Aidan O'Shea? I think I'll start with Aidan O'Shea because I think he'll have a knock-on effect on a lot of what Mayo do. Do you play Aidan O'Shea centre-forward on Keane O'Sullivan? Do you play him at full forward? Because I read a stat there earlier on today, it was in the Irish Times, that he got 7 balls in the second game against Dublin last year, in the first half alone. Long diagonal balls. Nothing came off any one of them.
Mm.
Keane O'Sullivan doubled up on him, you're gone. Why play Aidan O'Shea in there if you're going to give Dublin Keane O'Sullivan? It seems like a self-defeating tactic.
Do you know what I hate, though? When we're always talking about putting someone on Keane O'Sullivan, like, Keane O'Sullivan is not going to pick up Aidan O'Shea because Aidan O'Shea's decided you're marking me. Like, Keane O'Sullivan has his brief before the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where Aidan O'Shea lines out. Whoever is designated to mark him will mark him.
That's an important point. But that's an important point if McLaughlin plays as a sweeper.
Yeah, but
then they'll jumble it around and make Keane free. Do Mayo abandon McLaughlin as a sweeper at times during the game? They have to.
I think they have to.
Have to do the time.
You can't have a permanent sweeper.
When Aidan goes full forward, McLaughlin has to abandon sweeper and play orthodox, and then give Aidan a chance to not be double teamed. And then if they want to move back, get Aidan out of there. And Aidan O'Shea and McLaughlin are, you know, linked.
Yeah.
And whenever one of them moves,
there's a connection between their moves on Sunday. Yeah, definitely. Well, I still think Aidan O'Shea has to play a fair amount of time inside.
Yeah.
I really do. And, you know, Roy O'Carroll not being there could eventually be a factor. You know, it hasn't happened so far to date, but, you know, Phelan McMahon will pick him up. And that means if Barry Moran is inside, like, there is a mismatch there between Barry Moran and Johnny Cooper, or Barry Moran and Davy Byrne. Like, that's a fact.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen much of Barry Moran being a really good full forward, and it doesn't always work like that. I mean, I remember in 2009 at certain stages we put Kieran Whelan in a full forward in training, and it sounds great in theory. You know, he might have run 7 kickouts in a row, but just the trajectory of the ball, the full back rubbing up against him, knocking him, you know, disrupting him, it's not the same at all. So the fact that I haven't seen Barry Moran play full forward, win, you know, score 2-2 or win a load of catches, you know, you'd be a bit sceptical about it.
Yeah, we did it with Noel Garvin as well, and Noel Garvin actually scored a couple of points in that game, but were true actual balls that, you know, I could have won. Midfielders love a nice flighted ball. They don't like a ball landing in on top of them. Now diagonal balls have a nicer flight off the outside of the boot, so he could win them. But to think a midfielder, you just put him in there, he's able to catch a midfield, it's the same thing. Absolutely not. It's just not. I think the Barry Moran thing is something they could do late, but if they go with that, I think it's a little bit pushing it,
desperately. We used to hate when one of our midfielders would score a goal or did well in training full forward, because we thought, here we go, we're going to waste another 4 weeks.
Well, you blame Donaghy for it. It's all Donaghy's fault.
But I think with Aidan O'Shea and Killian O'Connor and Andy Moran in there, like, if you can push McLaughlin up, have the 6 orthodox forwards for times, then that full forward line is enough to cause some baller.
Oh, it is. 100%.
But I can see, I would hate to try and set my team up against Dublin, because I can just see why you wouldn't want to push them all up as well. I mean, they could just overrun you. The forwards have too much space. I just don't know what to do. I want to leave this podcast right now.
No, they have you. They have you over a barrel, because you tighten up your defence, you're screwed on getting your goals. And that's the question that we've been talking about all year. And Kerry, to be fair, didn't go with the orthodox. They left O'Mahony as a sweeper all the time, so they left Keenus. They gave Keenus Dublin Keenus Sullivan, which I was surprised, like, because we talked before that as well. Do it in like half and half, and because you won't get your goal as easily with Keane there.
Yeah, and like, you know, Aidan O'Mahony is back as a sweeper. Like, you know, Kerry still conceded 22 points. You know, they might have stopped them getting a goal. You know, I'm feeling man could have got one after 5 minutes. So I certainly don't believe in a permanent sweeper for 75 minutes. I think it has a negative effect. And I think for Mayo to win on Sunday, they have to be progressive and they have to be offensive at certain stages of the game to, you know, maybe in these short bursts that they've been very good at over the last few weeks, try and maximise maybe scoring 1-4, 1-5 in a 10 minute spell and then retreat and contain things for a 10 minute period. But certainly you'd nearly like to see Kevin McLaughlin up in the half forward line just as much as he is going to be back sweeping from a Mayo perspective.
And when he does that, when he kind of ghosts up into that position, suddenly Keane has already dropped. Suddenly he's unmarked there. You know what I mean? You don't have to make it so obvious. Like, look at me, I'm orthodox now. Like, ghost into there. Then come
you're
back.
An overlap free runner, aren't you, really, there
and
as well?
Just loiter around, you know, midfield for a while. Yeah. And then make sure you're getting back in your defensive duties.
Go down and tie your laces or something like that. Pretend you're not involved or interested.
Make sure McCarthy's shouting at Keane, going, Keane, no one's marking. You know what I mean? Keane then has to come out. Like, they have to do that and make Keane go, because he's in his comfort zone. Yeah, like, totally. He's completely in his comfort zone. And I want to talk about Dublin for a little while, lads, because we talked a lot about Mayo, obviously, in Mayo last week in Castlebar. And the reason I don't talk about Dublin that much is because, like Stephen Rochford said, he didn't see anything new from Dublin against Kerry that he didn't already know. Yeah. Because Dublin don't have to bring anything new to the table. All Dublin have to do is
bring their regular brilliance.
I think that's 100%. Bring their regular game. And if we match, you know, their work rate, we'll win the game because we're a better team than anybody else in the country. And that's their focus. And they talk about Jim, you know, the process, and this is... just make sure our heads are right, because the football will take care of itself. Yeah. So we talking about Dublin's game plan is just like, we know it.
Yeah.
Like, they're a brilliant kick passing team. They're a brilliant fetching team if you want it. They're a brilliant short kick passing team if you want it. They'll score points from play. Dean Rock has been sensational. I was reading a stat about Dean Rock, actually, lads. 93% success rate. 38 out of 41 frees this year. So, like, even Mayo can't even think that they're going to foul within 50 metres.
Yeah.
Last year, Dean Rock actually kind of lost his head a little bit towards the end of the championship. Wasn't it last year?
Yeah, he was probably coming under a bit of pressure come the semi-final, final stage. And he missed a couple of chances from open play. And that may have had an effect then on his threes. But, I mean, that 93% success rate is absolutely phenomenal. I doubt anyone's ever beaten that.
No.
You know, in championship scoring rates.
That's the thing. And, like, I mean, he's contributing from play as well. So the idea that he's just there for his freeze, that's kind of gone now.
Because you can't put the weakest defender on him now thinking he'll be grand, you know what I mean? Because he's winning a lot of ball out in front. And he's laying it off to Bernard or Dermo coming through for scores. And then he kicked two from play the last day as well. So, you know, and again, he's not this type of player you expect to be taken off after 45 minutes. You know, there's a good chance he'll be playing the majority of the game.
Yeah, he's just come on so much that it's another string to their bow. Do we see any changes in Dublin forward line? Is Paul Flynn under pressure? I feel dirty by saying it because he's like he's so bloody brilliant, but he's not firing and he's just not the same Paul Flynn. But I don't see a like for like replacement, so he will start, but he's not the same Paul Flynn as we've seen in previous years.
I don't think he's under pressure, but I think it's a great position for Jim Gavin. Like, it's not a cliche to do. You have players who could just come in, like, and it doesn't matter who plays, really. I know he's a completely different player, but I think the only change I see in Dublin is maybe Kevin McManaman, the way he's playing. Like, he's nearly created another line on the field where he's just coming out between the half forwards and full forwards, and he's winning ball and he's playing that little dink ball inside
into the crowded area
and he's going again, or he's just running with it. I mean, I imagine marking Kevin McManaman, because you don't want to get too tight to him, because he'd run past you. You don't want to give him space, because he'll just pop it off. Like, I think that's the biggest sort of nearly success story of the last two games anyway, where he's just sort of finding his space in between.
He's floating. Yeah. It's actually, like to use the soccer term, he's floating in between the lines.
Yeah. I don't want to say it.
But with Paul Flynn, yeah, I think he'll start. I mean, look, for 4 years there, he was just at a completely, you know, phenomenal level. Yeah. You know, with pound for pound, probably the best player in the country, you'd have him in your team. You know, the first guy in your team sheet. You know, maybe on the back of the Donegal 2014 semi-final, obviously, you know, with Keane O'Sullivan's role has changed. You know, I think Paul's role has slightly changed as well. He is playing that bit more deeper. He's not getting on the end of attacks as regularly as he was during 2011 to 2014. You know, he was kicking probably an average 3 points from play. So maybe as part of the whole evolution of their defensive system, as well as Keane dropping back into that sweeper role, Paul Flynn is the, you know, the second guy to sort of dilute his own role and come back and play a bit more defensive. So he does definitely have a role to play, but for Dublin have such a strong bench, you know, the guys to come on. You know, if you think of Paddy Andrews, Cormac Costello, Paul Mallion and Owen O'Gara, like there's probably three of them that I think would maybe start, be close to starting for Mayo, like, you know, whereas
they would.
Yeah,
let's be honest, like, I mean, Paddy Andrews would start for Mayo, there's no doubt about that. Whether O'Gara, maybe Mannion probably would in that corner instead of Regan, or maybe Regan's not making it now. But that's the thing, and you mentioned O'Gara, Mannion and Andrews, and all three of them will come on 100%. Do Mayo have the subs in defence to come on to mark them? Because these fellas coming against tired legs, this is what beats Dublin. Yeah. You almost need to keep three defenders, but then you're probably not bringing off enough subs. We mentioned this before. They'll have Barrett in reserve, but I think Barrett will probably start this All-Ireland final.
Yeah, he's a good player now, and I know he was catching up an injury, and was it 2013? He was one of their best players. You know, he was brilliant against Tyrone in the semi-final. He's had a couple of knee injuries, so yeah, potentially he could start. You know, they definitely don't have three or four subs of the calibre to handle the three
Kevin
or four.
Keane could come on to mark O'Gara, and I imagine that's a one for one, you know, big man for a big man, two fresh legs. You know, then you've got Mannion coming on. Like, I mean, you know, you're putting probably Lee Keegan or someone will end up marking, or Keith Higgins will end up marking him when he comes in. Yeah. Keith would have a really good engine, but like marking Mannion when your legs are tired, like, Christ.
That was the best point of McGuinness's piece, where he was just talking about the pattern that you're at risk of falling into. Like, you know, what happens? You have your burst, Dublin are outscoring you, you're 4 points up, and then you both run the bench, and then at that stage it's too late. Dublin are just this level ahead of you, and you can't catch them up. So you do, like, I know we were sort of poking a bit of fun at him, you do need to bring something different, whether it is mentally or like shape wise.
Well, that happened, I think, in the 2013 final a bit. Like, Mayo went all out for the first half. I mean, I think the previous three All-Ireland finals, they conceded early goals and the game was pretty much over after 15 minutes, twice against Kerry, and then the Donegal game in 2012. And I think at half time, they'd nearly emptied the tank at that stage.
Yeah.
Dublin came back into it.
That was the most relentless first half I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Both teams knocked the kick out. Didn't leave any time to draw your breath. I was watching Alan Dillon.
The ball wasn't out of play.
Never out of play.
Yeah,
it was a relentless first half. Yeah. Like, Mayo did look out on their feet in the last 10 minutes of that first half.
They were, and then Dublin obviously came back into the game, third quarter, built the lead, and Dublin really stumbled over the line then, because I think, was it Johnny Cooper got concussion or Owen O'Gara tore his hamstring? They used all their subs by like the 52nd minute, so Dublin were really there for the taking, but they just couldn't, you know, reel in the deficit, and they only got back to a point. And I think because Mayo had sort of given so much in the first 35 minutes, they didn't have enough then for the last sort of 50, from the 55th minute onwards.
Yeah, no, that's true. Who marks Fenton?
Shamey O'Shea. That'll be a really good battle now, you know. Yeah, I think Shamey O'Shea is still slightly underrated, you know, or undervalued.
The most undervalued player in Ireland.
You know, because his brother gets so much attention. But I think he's a very good player, and I think, you know, he has the engine and the ability to match Dublin in that area. You know, going back to the 2013 final again, Aidan suffered a bit in midfield because Keane O'Sullivan was just running ragged over and back, sideline to sideline on Stephen Cluxton's kickouts. You know, that won't happen to Shamey O'Shea on Sunday.
Yeah, that's the thing. And Donal Vaughan has that bit of, you know, defensive mindset to be able to take care of Michael Darragh. You know what I mean? He'll be able to carry him. It'll be a great matchup in midfield, you know? Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't think either kickouts will necessarily go to midfield all that often, but even, like, it's not the aerial battle in midfield that'll be fascinating.
On
it's like on the ground, what happens, which, it, you know, which isn't really normal. James McCarthy is a bit of an injury doubt,
is that a worry?
I heard that he's out. I've heard that he's not out. I know for the last game he took a really, like, he carried I don't know how Jim Gavin left him on the field the last day, because he was clearly carrying his shoulder. Yeah. Wasn't the same James McCarthy. Didn't break through the line. Broke through the line very, very little in comparison.
He did once at the very end that actually, I think, set up yeah. Dermot Connolly's score. But yeah, he definitely wasn't himself, and you know, coming on the back of a fairly serious medial ligament injury, yeah, as well, isn't ideal. When you come back, the last thing you want is actually take a hit that nearly, you know, knocks out your shoulder. So he was definitely patched up for the rest of that game. You know, how much improvement or recovery he's been able to do in the last 3 weeks is probably limited. I'd say they will just play him again and just try and get as much out of him, because they are short in defence, you know, for all the embarrassment and riches that they have up front. Yeah. You know, the fact that Jack and Rory aren't there,
yeah,
you know, Davy Byrne has done okay, John Small has done well,
done well,
but that means he's not a sub to come on, you know. So
who did they have? Lowndes?
Eric Lowndes has played. Now he's very much an attacking half back. Mick Fitzsimons is your natural one to come into the full-back, yeah, line if you need to come. And then Darren Daly, but he hasn't played much football at all. So those are your three options in defence. But yeah, maybe
it's
Sunday.
It's not box office, no, like their forwards are. There's no, yeah, doubt. But like, I mean, Johnny Cooper and Philly McMahon, we'll just mention them before we move on. Like, I've watched Johnny Cooper. I've marked him before. Like, he's actually turned into a beast of, yeah, a man. Like, yeah, whatever the strength and conditioning is. And I'll move on to that as well. They just attack. Like, Johnny Cooper wins the ball out in front. He's brilliant at it because he marks you from the front and he goads you into giving this diagonal ball, and he always,
and he's confident in himself.
Yeah. Now, it's a risky business, yeah, but yeah, I remember marking John Keane, yeah, and he was the same. It's like, yeah, gee, you know, like, yeah, you never win a handy one out, yeah, in front of them. Yeah. And that's all I wanted. Like, I don't, yeah, mind, because when you're not a finisher, like, you know, you just want to get ball out in front. If you're a finisher, you could maybe, you know, gamble and,
yeah,
let him
or
on.
Or be patient. And
be patient, yeah, yeah, if you don't have that. Yeah. But Johnny Cooper then will win the ball. He'll win it out in front. Immediately he'll lay it off to someone else.
Head down
and, yeah, sprints down, yeah, the line.
Doesn't even look at the ball.
Doesn't even
for about 30-40 yeah, yards. Just sprints.
Just gone, like, yeah, he's in a drill.
Yeah,
like, he's,
yeah,
not even clear about the play.
Yeah. Doesn't even look ahead. He could, like, be running into someone.
Imagine,
or, yeah,
marking that machine. Like, your heart would be, yeah, broken.
You're just praying for a turnover. Quick, give me it.
It's the first time those drills have looked relevant as well, where you, oh, pop, yeah, it off and sprint,
yeah,
to the next cone.
Well, his head, yeah, actually goes down.
It does, yeah. It's like a sprinter coming out from, you know, a 100-meter sprint.
Yeah.
Head is down for the first 30
yeah,
yards.
Now,
yeah,
Philly's clever. Philly ghosts, like, you don't actually see Philly sneaking up the field. Yeah. He just lands up there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's a bit clever. Johnny's a lot more obvious, as in, this, yeah, is what Johnny does. You're like, yeah, sometimes you're like, how did Philly get up there? I haven't, yeah, really noticed his run.
But he's definitely developed physically in the last 18
Unreal.
Months. You know, I suppose he works in DCU. Maybe he's in there, you know, as much in the sports centre. He's probably in there as much as he can on any off day.
About the strength and condition with Dublin, because, like, maybe you just have a generation of big men. Like, and this is the argument. Keno Sutton's a big man. John Small's a natural kind of a bull of a
James
man.
McCarthy.
McCarthy's a big 6'2". The midfielder, big. Fenton's a monster. The half forward line are all big, yeah, men. Like, I mean, they're so much bigger, stronger and faster than
they're
other
perfectly
teams.
Built, like.
Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, they are, in terms of height and strength. And, you know, they've bulked up, but they haven't lost any fitness, haven't lost any speed whatsoever.
Yeah. So who is the strength and conditioning fella? Because, like, I mean, I always thought the one thing you can be sure of is strength and conditioning. Like, there's not that much variation. Like, I've worked under a good few different ones, and they all do different variations of the same thing.
Yeah.
But Dublin seem to have clicked on some formula which makes them stronger, fitter and faster, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, certainly during Pillar Caffrey's time, I think we overemphasised on the weight. You know, I think there was so much talk about the Armagh team in 2002, yeah, and how bulked up they got, and the likes of Enda McNulty and McGeaney and these guys, Dermot Marsden. It was nearly like a rugby union, rugby league.
Yeah, the arms.
So now a guy came in, Dan Tobin from Leinster and DCU, and he was very good. Now, he was only a rookie. He was straight out of college and he was very good. Then he went on to work with Leinster. Then we had another guy in called Sammy, who went on to work with a couple of other inter-county teams. And he was brilliant under Pat Gilroy, really nailed the programme, the timing of it as well. You know, obviously you bulk up a fair amount between November and February, but what a lot of teams do when the National League finishes, they stay away from the gym for the rest of the year, whereas you still have to maintain it. But Martin Kennedy was the guy that was there under, I think, Jim's first 2 or 3 years. He came from the Dublin Hurlers. There was a place out in Blanchardstown, Nada, that he had, and lads were very good at it. But lads have to buy into it as well, you know, and they were very dedicated. Lads were doing a lot of stuff themselves. I mean, I heard Jim Gavin before saying he was trying to rein in lads because they wanted to do extra sessions themselves and try and make sure they rest and recover. And then Brian Cullen's been the man that's there for the last 9 months. Yeah.
It seems like they must be working on a lot of explosive stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's lifting weights, I'd say, isn't really done that much.
No. Well, there's no beach weights, there's no arm curls, there's no of that crack, you know.
Yeah. That's the point.
Yeah, yeah. It's all around that sort of core, you know, I'd say upper legs area that they focused on. And yeah, they're just in really good condition at the moment.
Yeah, there's no doubt. What are the matchups, lads? We want to finish a bit of analysis on matchups, because I have here, I just had a look through it, where Harrison will take on Brogan, Higgins will take on Rock, Barrett will take on McManaman, Keegan on Connolly, Boyle on Kilkenny, and Durkin on Flynn. Any disagreements with that?
Boyle, I think, could maybe go on Flynn.
Boyle might Flynn.
Flynn. I think that might match up a bit better.
And then Durkin take on Kilkenny. So yeah. Durkin's not the greatest man marker in the world, you know.
Yeah, Kilkenny will be dropping deeper, though. You know, he has developed that role over the last couple of months. So maybe Durkin was, you know, they see an opportunity for him to get a bit forward on it. So that's maybe the one change I'd see could happen on Sunday.
Yeah, on the other side then, what way do you see them matching up? Johnny Cooper, Andy Moran, I think that's a guarantee.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Phelan McMahon on Aidan O'Shea. That's another banker.
That's another banker. Yeah. Davey Byrne on Killian. Killian could get a bit of joy there.
Yeah, the Killian hasn't been as prolific as previous years. You know, he's maybe carrying a knock and stuff like that. And even his frees, I think, has been, our place balls have been around a 65% compared to Dean's 93%. So that's certainly an area that they'd feel is significant improvement can be get. But yeah, I mean, Killian is a handful, you know. He's well able. He's got hat-tricks in championship matches, so he has a good eye for goal.
He's more of a finisher. James McCarthy and Dermot O'Connor, is that going to happen? And are we,
well, last year it was Jack McCaffrey on Dermot O'Connor, and I found that fascinating because the two players racked up the highest number of possessions in the game. They marked each other for 70 minutes for both games. One player ended up getting young player of the year, and the other player got the senior player of the year.
So I love those arrangements.
Yeah, so it was nearly an arrangement saying, look, you can get 30 possessions as long as I get 30 possessions, you know.
That's brilliant. Yeah. You love that kind of thing. So then, well, John Small then's on Kevin McLaughlin. Like, John Small won't mark Kevin McLaughlin. John Small will probably mark Jason Doherty and leave Keane Keena Sullivan free or something like that. That's probably the way it's going to work. But James McCarthy could easily mark Dermot O'Connor, and that, like, if that's the way it goes. Or as James McCarthy comes in on Doherty, one of the two situations.
Yeah, well, I think it's obvious that obviously Keane is going to be the spare player if there's going to be a spare player in the Dublin defence, and then the same with Kevin McLaughlin. So how many times they actually meet each other might be too rare at all during the game, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Great stuff, lads. I think we need some sort of podcast award for getting through that analysis session without mentioning Stephen Cluxton once. Or the word kick out. I'm very proud of us here, lads. Alright, we'll be back next with predictions.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me, you're looking
out
at me
of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in Coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Right, lads, I'm looking on Ladbrokes there earlier on. Mayo are 10-3, over 3-1, which is incredible.
Generous
stuff.
Enough, yeah.
Dublin 4-11. Handicap betting is Dublin -3, Mayo +3. Dublin -3 is 4-5. You're not even getting even money, and you're getting over even money on Mayo +3. So if you kind of have a sneaking suspicion that Mayo could do it, throw £3 onto your prediction, and you've got over even money. So that's a no-brainer if you're kind of half tilting towards Mayo. But Barry, we'll start with you. What would you go for there?
I think Dublin will win. I think Mayo have a lot of things have to go well for Mayo to win the game. They're going to have to keep a clean sheet, they're going to have to get a couple of goals themselves. If you're trying to predict the scoreline for Mayo that would get them the win, you're probably looking at maybe a 2-10 to 15 points, and I think it'll be very difficult to try and keep this Dublin forward line down to 15 points. Now I think it will be tight. Mayo will give absolutely everything to it, and you know, I'd like to see them still in the game, you know, and the game in the melting pot with 10 or 15 minutes to go. Big thing for this Dublin team is, you know, the three All-Irelands over the last 4 or 5 years haven't won any All-Ireland comfortably, you know, whereas some of the great teams of the Kerrys and Dublins over the 70s and 80s, you know, they've had maybe a blowout of an All-Ireland final. But I don't think that's going to happen on Sunday. I think it's going to be tight, but certainly I think Dublin have more than enough to win once their work rate and heads are right, and I think Dublin by 2.
Conan?
It depends on Cluxton's kickouts.
Colin,
I
would you push up on him now? Or would you,
you have to get at Cluxton.
Sit or squeeze.
I think Mayo will win, and I don't think there's any real reason or logic to it. I guess I want to believe that Dublin can be beaten. Like, I think this is probably the best team I've ever seen. Full of the best players I've ever seen.
Ah, you're moving it on to teams there.
But I think that Jim O'Connor will fancy himself against either John Small or a half-baked James McCarthy. I think Andy Moore might get one or two balls over the top. We're talking about Cooper Morgan from the front, but I think Moore's clever enough and he moves enough to try and sort of find some sort of space.
He's got a couple of goals on Clarkson as well, you know, during his time in 2006, like,
even if he's going to set up one, but he can just want a dangerous ball over the top. I think there are places there where Mayo can hurt them, and I know it's an old sort of cliche, I don't think they sort of fear Dublin either. I think they hate them so much that they go in with no fear.
Yeah, and the one thing about Dublin and Kerry, it almost looked like a professional team physically against an amateur team, almost like Aussie rules with Australia and Ireland. Mayo can match Dublin physically, in size wise they have the match. Like, we went through Dublin's team size.
They're the only team in the country,
by a country mile, that are able to say, right, you're a big team, you're a fit team, You're not going to beat us on that today.
Yeah. And I think, like, looking as good as Dublin are, looking at their Donegal game and their Kerry match, I just don't think they looked unbeatable. I think they looked like they could be shaken. They looked like they could be got at. And it definitely looks like Mayo can hurt them if they want. And I guess I just want Mayo to win.
I'm not going to lie, it's supposed to be objective. I love Dublin the way they play, there's no doubt about that. Like, if anyone that's neutral isn't hoping Mayo win, you're a heartless fecker. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Like, I mean, I think they can win the smart money, there's no doubt. It's not covering myself, the smart money is in Dublin, but, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, how much longer can Mayo put up with this?
There's a desperation level to it.
And look through their team. It's not just desperation. It's a bloody brilliant team, man for man. Like, they've been there. They've been in big games. They're 5 points ahead of Dublin only last year in a replay. In a bloody replay. When Dublin had learned, you know what I mean? Yeah. Dublin were like, oh, they came back 5 points ahead and threw it away. They won't throw it away this time. Like, you can be sure of that. If they have to bring their 14 men back behind the 45, if they're 2 or 3 points up, I'd say Mayo will
start a row or something.
No problem doing that. You know what I mean? There'll be plans in action for different things. That if they go 4 points up with 20 minutes to go, we're in shutdown mode, I reckon, with Mayo. Whereas that was never the case. They're conceding goals. So I'll go for Mayo, but, like, I mean, you know, they're 3-1. 3-1 alone is just incredible pricing him. I'm going to go for him, just maybe because of law of averages, like my father likes to quote to me, like, they can't keep losing. So, like,
it was your trip to Castlebar last year.
I was one over.
Honestly, that trip through to Castlebar was like, it just showed you how obsessive everyone was. Yeah. There were flags everywhere. They were like all across the road. It was just banners and billboards, and it's crazy. Like, it's a way of life down there, and I just feel like that's.
Yeah, you couldn't begrudge them on All Ireland as long as it doesn't come at the expense of your own county.
Yeah, well, that's true. Mikey actually put up a video on the website on sportsjoe.ie of a homecoming in 1989. They lost the All Ireland. They flew back to Knock Airport, and the place is bloody thronged. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, what is going on with that county? They deserve it. Like, they really, really do. I don't think there's any doubt. Before we finish, there's a couple of novelty bets on Ladbrokes. Dublin to lift Sam Maguire Cup for 5 years in a row is 14-1. So they've already won one. This would be two. If they win this, I think that's worth a sneaky tenner for 140 quid. If they win this without their two best defenders, maybe not their two, well, up there, their two, player of the year and an all-star, it's not inconceivable that they would win the next the three after that.
14-1. They have to win the next
14
four.
14-1 to win the next four.
No way. I don't know. That's not going to happen.
Really?
No, because in 2 or 3 years, there'll be no Cluxton, Brogan, Flynn.
Cluxton's only 34. Conley.
No, he won't play. Definitely won't.
He, like, his game, like, let's be honest, like, this lad's super fit. He's a machine. He could play at least 42 with the life he lives a professional lifestyle. It's all whether he wants it or not, really. But I think
injuries can play a part as well. I think he doesn't hit the frees in 45s because, you know, he's a bit of maybe a groin injury over the last year or two. Right. So that can play a part. But no, I wouldn't go with that bet at all.
Right, okay. Well, last one.
I'll give you 20-1.
I think this is a great bet. If Mayo win, Enda Kenny to be seen in tears in RT if Mayo win. 10-11. Almost even money. I think that's a banker.
No, not a banker. Yeah.
An absolute banker. Yeah, he plays air guitar at Springsteen. Come on, listen. End of the
Even keeper. If he doesn't want to do it, he'll probably just do it for...
No, he'd be advised to do it. 100% this is going to happen.
Yeah. Will Michael D, the Galway man, be in tears as well?
Yeah, different type. Yeah, Michael Lee's more of an emotional type of fella. He could be in tears just for Ireland. All right, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks to Conan, Mikey, Dion and Evan for putting the show together. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at sportsjoe_GEA. Subscribe to us on iTunes and we'll see you on Monday for a big review show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.